Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Marico Limited's Q1 FY26 earnings conference call. We have with us the senior management of Marico, represented by Saugata Gupta, MD and CEO, and Mr. Pawan Agrawal, Group CFO and CEO, International Business. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. Before we get started, I would like to remind you that the Q&A session is only for institutional investors and analysts, and therefore, if there is anybody else who is not an institutional investor or analyst who would like to ask questions, please directly reach out to Marico's investor relations team. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Saugata Gupta for his opening comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, hi everyone. Good evening to all those who have joined the call. I would like to start with a narrative on the operating environment during the quarter gone by, after which I will touch upon our performance and strategic objectives going forward. During the quarter, we witnessed stable to improving demand trends in India across urban and rural. Premium categories continued to outperform the mass segment, while alternate channels like modern trade, e-commerce, and especially quick commerce continued to lead growth. While general trade also moved into a growth after some quarters as a result of focused initiatives, improved execution, and the ongoing progress of Project Setu. Looking ahead, we are optimistic about a gradual and broad-based recovery in consumption sentiment, supported by easing retail and food inflation, a favorable monsoon, increased government spending, and higher MSPs. Moving on to the quarterly performance, we have continued to deliver a sequential uptick in underlying volume growth in India, which is nearing double digits, backed by improving traction in the core, aided by GT improvement and sustained momentum in our new businesses. Offtake trends have remained encouraging, with nearly the entire business either sustaining or gaining market share, and over 80% of the business sustaining on improving penetration. Revenue growth in the India business reached multi-year highs, as the strengthening volume trajectory was supplemented by pricing actions in core portfolios taken in response to the sharp inflation in key commodities like copra and edible oil over the last 12 months. Delving further into India business, I will now share some perspective on the performance of our key categories. Parachute has continued to demonstrate resilience amidst the hyperinflationary conditions in copra prices. In such hyperinflation, while consumption titration is typical, Parachute has exhibited minimal volume impact and consolidated its market share, underscoring its inherent strength in terms of price inelasticity and deep consumer trust, despite multiple rounds of price increases and MLH reductions amounting to an effective price increase of 60% plus. After normalizing for MLH, the brand remained in growth territory during the quarter. We have delivered this growth despite consciously rationing certain low-margin volumes to protect brand profitability. During the quarter, the brand continued to gain share in modern trade, e-com, while pricing transitions are in fact quicker, and the new prices have already hit the shelves. We understand that the unprecedented levels of inflation in this particular cycle have been due to the supply-demand gap created by a combination of crop yields due to uneven weather patterns in the first half of 2024 and speculative activities and some unseasonal rains in May, April, and May, and the temperature fluctuations this year, which further extended this cycle and led to a sharp spike in April-June period where normally conversions start, but this year, because of rains, the conversions got delayed. Principally, it is the inelasticity of certain sources of demand that accentuates the demand-supply gap during such times. As you know, copra can't be imported. While the length and severity of this inflationary cycle poses short-term challenges, we have been able to hold on our ground and deliver stable outcomes on the back of pricing and enduring equity of Parachute. The brand has successfully navigated multiple hyperinflationary cycles, whether it's in 2014-15 or over an 18-24-month cycle in 2017-19, where we had also taken around 35% price increases and still delivered 5.5% growth in over a period of 2017-19 and a 6.5% growth in 2014-15. The scale of operations, coupled with resilient back-end capabilities and prudent inventory management, continues to reinforce a competitive edge. That being said, we believe the current market conditions are unsustainable. and the copra market should settle down over the course of this fiscal, given the forecast of monsoons and the decent progress so far. In fact, prices have just come down around 12% from the highs in the last 2 weeks. As consumer pricing gradually normalizes, we expect Parachute to chart meaningful recovery in volume growth given our competitive advantage under such condition where the smaller players are out of the market. Saffola Oils bounced back to deliver mid-single digit volume growth, which is in line with our medium-term aspiration. We expect the brand to be steady on a full-year basis. During the quarter, we launched Saffola Cold Press Oil range on e-commerce and quick commerce platform. This is in line with our purpose of the brand to reinforce healthy cooking choices in Indian households and premiumize its play. Value-added hair oils had a strong step up in its recovery, led by sustained momentum in the mid and premium segments. The franchise gained 150 bips in value market share this quarter on a MAT basis. We are confident of maintaining a double-digit growth momentum in the franchise throughout the year on the back of sharper brand activation supported by a strategic pivot from trade-led investments toward brand building and therefore increasing SOV, especially in the mid and premium segments, along with enhanced direct reach to Project Setu, which invariably benefits Val. The foods portfolio scaled in line with expectations. The core Saffola franchise grew in double digits, while True Elements and Plix's plant-based nutrition range sustained accelerated growth momentum. We remain on track to deliver over 25% growth this year and over the medium term while steadily improving profitability. During the quarter, we also expanded our muesli range with two variants. We'll continue the innovation momentum and expand the TAM of Saffola through extension into relevant adjacencies. We have a clear path for each of the three food brands and see tremendous TAM expansion opportunities across the board, and some of it we have shared in the presentation for Plix and True Elements. Premium personal care continued with strong growth momentum during the quarter led by the Digital First portfolio. The Digital First portfolio comprising Beardo Justers and the personal care portfolio of Plix exited the quarter with an ARR of over 850 crores, scaling up well ahead of our earlier targets. Given this trajectory, we are on track to reach 2.5x of FY24 ARR by FY27. We continue to operate with a keen eye on the profitability and are striving to deliver double-digit EBITDA margins in this portfolio by FY27. Moving to international business, we recorded high-teen constant currency growth, maintaining a stellar momentum. Bangladesh delivered a robust performance underpinned by broad-based growth across core and new franchises, while Vietnam had a muted quarter. Strategic interventions underway expect a gradual recovery in this business in the quarters ahead. In MENA, the accelerated scale up in the Gulf region, Egypt continued, supported by healthy traction in new franchises and sustained market share gains in our core and in the NPD. South Africa was flattish this quarter, but we aim to achieving our full-year growth aspirations. To sum up, we have started the year on a strong footing with both India volume growth, overseas business, constant currency growth, and the consolidated revenue growth trending positively and reaching multi-year highs. We firmly believe that we are in a virtuous cycle, by virtuous growth flywheel, and like to share a perspective on why we see it that way. Over the past few years, the CPG landscape has undergone significant shifts shaped by macro events and evolving consumer behavior. During the COVID period, while categories like food, health, and hygiene benefited from natural tailwinds, we believe it also brought a degree of complacency among CPG players since the share of wallet was artificially shifting in their favor, given that the lockdown created a situation where other expenses, whether it's out of home, whether things like travel, entertainment was not being done. Subsequently, during the inflationary environment following the Ukraine war, the sector delivered pricing-led top-line growth and A&P and other cost-led margin expansion, and some of them got rewarded. In emerging markets, however, we believe the core mantra for consumer companies must remain centered on driving volume-led growth, which is far more sustainable and enduring lever for growth. We draw a lot of confidence from 99% of the business gaining or sustaining market share in India, which has happened after a while. We are consciously staying away from the trap of optimizing margins at the cost of long-term brand investments. We've also resisted steroid-based selling in organized trade and investing in below-the-line or price-led selling. We believe our resource allocation strategy over the past few quarters is paying off. We have also done significant SKU rationalization so that we believe in fewer, bigger, better. We are also seeing the positive impact of Project Setu-led initiatives in rural and on mid and premium segments of VAHO. As we scale this up further in urban, we expect it to catalyze growth in food and PPC categories like serum and male grooming. In addition to inflationary cycles being conducive to GT ROIs, our prior investments towards reinvigorating the GT distribution system have already begun to yield early wins with the revival of growth in the channel after a long hiatus. In addition, this high top-line growth is helping in improvement of the ROI of our GT distribution partners after a long time. Next, the scale-up of our digital brands has opened new frontiers for diversification innovation, offering avenues for accelerated revenue and profit growth in the medium term. Our brands are earning recognition, with three of our digital brands featuring in the latest edition of the Insurgent Brand List, published by one of the top VCs and one of the big three MBB management consulting firms. In addition to that, we have started the process of cost synergies amongst the digital brands, as well as data synergies. Coming to our strategic objectives for this year, with high single-digit volume growth in India as our base case, we'll strive to deliver double-digit volume growth in some quarters. Supported by pricing growth, we will target around 25% revenue growth this year. While the pricing-led denominator effect may suppress optical margins this year, we are not alarmed by the optical drop in operating margins and firmly believe this is a temporary hiatus and not any structural concern. We would think of this inflationary cycle like a one-time upheaval, which could in some categories potentially uproot business models. Although we are delivering sector-leading growth and moderate profits in spite of this high inflation, which is unprecedented, and I believe exceptional. While delivering double-digit EBITDA growth this year may be somewhat of a challenge, we expect better visibility by the second half. That said, consistent with historical trends, moderate profit delivery during inflationary years have been invariably followed by considerable profit accelerations in deflationary periods, and thus we are fairly confident of delivering double-digit profit CAGR over the next 2 years. We have seen cycles like this before, and each time we have come out stronger. We believe that what continues to anchor us through these cycles is a resilient and experienced senior leadership team with collective experience of over 140 years in Marico and average leadership tenure of 8 to 10 years that reflects deep institutional memory, understanding of various business cycles. Ashish, who handles, he's the CEO India, has been working with, together we have been working for 20 years, and Pawan has also been with us for 21 years. So between the combined three of us who are handling the business, we have around 63 years of combined experience in Marico. Over the last few years, we made significant investment effort towards strengthening our leadership depth, and we now have a solid Gen Next leadership in place. Looking at the medium term, while the journey from 5K to 10K, 10,000 crores took longer, and we were not happy about it, there's a very fair chance that we could touch 15,000 crores over the next 2 years. Therefore, we also believe that the 10,000 to 20,000 crore leap can be achieved within the next 5 years if we continue to maintain this momentum. Last but not the least, sustainability remains central to our strategy. A sustainability 2.0 framework is delivering strong progress across all key focus areas and moving up towards our 2030 goals. We are confident that our commitment to creating shared value will drive long-term sustainable and differentiated growth. With that, I conclude my remarks and thank you, and we are happy to take your questions.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Abneesh Roy from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congrats on very good volume growth, revenue growth. My first question is on the India hair oil business. So three subparts to that. First is copra. How is the supply side now looking? And what kind of correction you see in the next 2-3 quarters? That is my first sub-question. Second is Vaho has seen a smart recovery after few years of challenging times. The entire category saw challenging times. Now with urban recovery being talked about by most FMCG companies and rural continuing to remain reasonably robust, would you expect Vaho volume growth to accelerate from here? That is the first question.
Let me first address your question on coconut oil. As far as copra is concerned, as I said, that the correction has started. We also need to understand that we, being a significant buyer of copra, we have to also manage you know, the entire supply chain assurance as well as pricing. We are now in a state where we believe we have much more control of the situation, because as you know, that copra and the overall coconut demand titration happens in these kinds of inflation. So the normal S&D imbalance adjusted itself, because every consumption point gets titrated. So, and given our supply chain advantages and other things, our position building and other rest, I think we are in a far more better control. So we believe that things are much better. And therefore, I don't see any further inflation at this point in time, but we'll be able to give a much better kind of a feel in the second half. But as I said, that in spite of taking such price increases, we have actually in transaction terms still delivered a slight growth of 1%. And given the outlook and parachute, we should be under control. Coming to value-added hair oil, we took a conscious call in the last over the last 2-3 quarters, because we faced unreasonable competition where a lot of you know, spends went from ATL to BTL in, you know, the bottom of pyramid, especially in the Amla segment, that we wanted to defocus, convert a lot. And what happens normally if competitive spend falls, you can maintain the same SOV at the, you know, the at half the spends or 3-4. We said that was a suicidal strategy. You know, it was, you know, it doesn't make sense. So we had repivoted towards investing behind medium and premium brands, which makes certain margins. That is working. In addition to that, the first benefits of Setu we are getting, especially in rural, because whenever you do direct distribution, the second and the third brand distribution increases. And therefore, we are extremely confident of, you know, maintaining this double-digit value growth in, you know, in the terms of the value-added hair oils business. And if you take X Amla, actually the volume growth is double digits. Yeah, and this is the high margin part of the business. So you can understand this plus, you know, the food margin improvement, as a digital margin improvement, we have been able to hold on to margin in spite of this kind of a unprecedented, you know, input cost inflation.
Thanks. One quick follow-up question here on the coconut hair oil business. Whenever we see such sharp inflation in FMCG and specifically in hair oil, we see local players kind of lower their intensity and presence in market, and obviously copra has seen absolutely insane kind of valuation. So if you could talk about some of the local players in the core market, and similarly on the consumption side, because customer in India is extremely value focused, have you seen any kind of a consumer change at the coconut hair oil level, that some part is going to Waho? I do notice your very resilient volumes, but that could be a function of market share gain, because the very big retailer which had a con call, annual call recently, they did say that in coconut oil, they saw a very sharp decline versus your almost flattish volume. So you have done quite well. But have you seen some section of customers shift to other hair oil and you have gained market share? So it's kind of getting hidden.
So I think, as you know, that our entire growth model is based on unbranded to branded and letting market share from, you know, other smaller players in the coconut oil market. I alluded to two pieces of statistics. In 2015 over 2014, we had taken a 35% price increase and we delivered a 6.5% volume growth and yes, market share gain. Over 19 to 17, because it was over a 18 to 20 month period, the average price increase was again 35% and we had delivered a 2-year CAGR of parachute of 5%. So I believe that we should be able to hold on to the volumes. There could be titrations, but all I can tell you that we are taking certain steps, whatever, in terms of our strategy, which will ensure that the volumes are not impacted. Yes, the smaller players and other smaller branded players will be far more impacted.
Sure. Last question. On the international business, if you could comment, 3 sub-questions there. In terms of the Gulf and Egypt, what is happening, 42% CCG, is there some base effect? Is this sustainable? On South Africa, what is happening there, why you have not changed the full year guidance in spite of weak flattish number. And Bangladesh, are you getting volume growth? My sense is the pricing growth in the coconut hair oil business there also will be quite sharp, of course lower than India given you do have import option there. How is the volume growth in Bangladesh?
Okay, so let me address one by one. As far as the Middle East and which is the MENA is concerned, the growth is being fueled by two things. One is growth in the core in terms of market share gain in, you know, in our core businesses. As you know that we never participated in VAHO in Egypt. We launched VAHO in Egypt 2-3 years ago, and then we have launched a full, you know, a portfolio of VAHO in Egypt, which is Herbs India. We have got Fiance and we have got Amla. Similarly, we have got an aggressive in distribution and investments in, you know, and also in, we have launched shampoo in Egypt and Middle East. We have launched shower gel and body lotion. So the NPD contribution has been significant, and all the NPDs are doing well, as well as we are getting share in our core. So this last year also we grew 30% plus, so this continues, and we are expecting to be able to have this accelerated growth in the Middle East because it's a very strong focus and investment market for us, because the, you know, in terms of the opportunity or the headroom for both top line growth, and we have also done this with a significant improvement in operating margin, so that we continue to reduce our dependence on Bangladesh both for both top line and bottom line. I think your second question was on South Africa. Sometimes in quarters we do some, you know, certain readjustment of strategy and all that. So we are pretty confident that we start getting back quarter two, and we have a visibility of July that we'll get it back on growth. And over the full year, we should be able to hit double-digit growth, which has been our consistent this one. Having said that, again, as you know, over the last 4-5 years, we have outperformed the sector by a mile in South Africa and significantly improved profitability. So we have been able to prove that, yes, we haven't made so much investments in South Africa or Africa, but with a very, very frugal and a very efficient capital allocation, we have been able to give sector-beating growth consistently in South Africa over the last 5 years. Now, coming to Bangladesh, Bangladesh has two components as a volume growth in the core. There's significant NPD performance. As you know, we have done very well, doing recently well in shampoo. We are doing well in baby. And there is some part of inflation in price increase in Bangladesh has been far lower, because international copra has not got impacted so much as the Indian copra.
Sure, thanks. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vivek Maheshwari from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Swagat and team, good to see results. First is on, you know, Swagat, on ATL versus BTL, what you mentioned. So at a consolidated level, I see your advertising spends, you know, have gone up quite a bit, about 25%. But India business is actually down 20%. The absolute number is like lowest in the last 5 years, or let's say 20 quarters. The percentage number, I know the denominator shifts quite a bit in your case, but we have seen inflationary cycles in the past. At about 3.5%, this is also the lowest number that at least I recall or we have ever seen. Can you just elaborate more on this?
No, you're right, Vivek. It's incorrect to look at ASP percentage to sales because of denominator effect. Having said that, yes, of course, there has been some cut in the India A&P. But let me just tell you 2-3 broad contours for that. Number one, we have not, you know, cut in the focus categories of premium, VAHO, foods and PPC. So these categories we have invested adequately. And also, Shagata also touched upon this fact that we've ensured that our share of voice is higher than our share of market in focus categories. Secondly, in BOP and VAHO, we have definitely cut down due to competitive activity at the trade. And therefore, we have rationalized ATL spends towards consumer beneficial pricing in that segment. Additionally, I think in this quarter, we have cut down a lot of non-media spends. Like, we have rationalized the frequency of Nielsen subscription data. We have deferred some of the new film shoots, which was discretionary, and hence reduction in utilization of celebrity time cost. And additionally, we also extracted a lot of inefficiency out of media and non-media spends, and hence getting more bang for the buck for the same dollar spent. So these are some of the reasons because of which you see the NP spends little going down. But going ahead, we believe that NP will trend upwards in India business, and of course at a console level we continue to invest behind all the focus categories and new parts of the business.
I see. Okay. So
just to add,
basically,
you know, in terms of media spend, there has been no reduction.
No, why do you say that? Sorry, because the number is just about like 85 crores.
That is because all the cuts have been done on non-media and production and other activities. But we have ensured that the media spends have not got.
Media spends on the focus categories, in fact, has increased. For other part, as I explained, largely because of non-media cut in some of the elements, and plus some of the non-focus categories, of course, we have cut down.
Got it, Pawan and Swagata. And to, you know, on the, so when I subtract, you know, standalone from console, the advertising spend over there is up 60%. I'm guessing that bulk of this will be on India business only and international movement will be relatively lower, right? Is that fair?
Yeah, you're right. So it is largely on the newer businesses and also international business also has gone up, but not to that extent.
Got it. And the second thing is, you know, your comment in the press release, the way in which or in the information update about the M&As. So what you mentioned in the existing geographies or even a new geography, I'm guessing that is more in the context of international business that you're talking about. And you have done, you know, I would say exceptionally, you know, well on the acquisitions that you have done in the digital first D2C space in India. Are there still white spaces that you are looking at in India, or do you think the platforms are ready, the brand platforms, and it is just more, and you have also given in your release, you know, the categories that you can, you know, expand into with the existing platforms. So how do you think about India acquisitions from here on?
So I think there are one or two spaces which are, I think, available still. See, we are clearly going into not only market attractiveness, but a right to win, which are adjacencies. So we believe that there are one or two spaces which are available, whether it's in food or, you know, personal care. In addition to that, I mean, as you know, food is an interest for us. So therefore, we will continue to be, I think, looking into these acquisitions. Our track record for acquisition in terms of has been good. We now have a good playbook, and we also believe that we see ourselves as a strategic investor of choice, because I think the kind of, given that we are, when we have multiple brands, the kind of synergies and the kind of costs and the kind of knowledge we can give and help a founder grow his or her business is, I think, significant.
Got it. Thank you. Wishing you all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arushi Lunia from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi. Hi, team. Am I audible? This is Avi here from Macquarie.
Yeah, hi, Avi.
Hi, sir. So I just had one question on Copra. Just wanted to understand a bit. How is current Copra versus the, you know, sector average? Is it, if you could kind of give us a sense. And based on that, would it be fair to say, if you could kind of help first clarify that part?
You didn't get the question.
Sector average versus 1Q average. Is it ahead of that? Is it below that? How would it be? Just to get a perspective.
Yeah, 12% down in the last few. So that 106% was for the quarter, but yes, if you take a point today, it's 12% down in the last.
From the peaks.
So from the sector average, it would still be down. That's the correct understanding. From the 1Q average, it would be down. That would be the right understanding. Copra.
Price levels in quarter one, it went up further in July, and now we are seeing about 10-12% correction from the peak that we had seen in July.
Okay.
And again, sort of link it back to the point which Shogata had mentioned earlier, we do not see any further pricing action, at least given the recent trends that we have seen in the copra prices.
Got it. So just a clarification, it would be fair to say that whatever was the 1Q EBITDA growth, the growth logically should kind of improve as we go forward, given that WAHO is improving, given that we are seeing, is that a fair expectation to...
It's difficult to give quarter-on-quarter guidance, Avi. In fact, Saugata touched upon his opening commentary that while we had given a double-digit profit growth guidance earlier, in the current scenario, it looks a little challenging, but we'll still strive for high single-digit growth in this year. But typically, what we have seen is that inflationary years get followed by a deflationary year, and we have been able to make up for more than what we could not do in the previous year. Therefore, from a two-year perspective, we are fairly confident that we should be able to deliver double-digit profit growth.
The only thing I also added, alluded to is just wait and watch in the second half. See, right now, as I said that, yes, double-digit looks challenging as of now, but you never know. See, I mean, 3 months ago, I never could have predicted copra prices, no?
Yeah. No, no, I understood. So except copra, there's nothing that I have to look.
Watch, you know, and but as you know, we never give up like the Indian cricket team till the last you know, last ball. So we will not give up. We will be like the Indian cricket team.
No, no, perfect. That's all from my side. I just wanted to clarify that point only. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mihir Shah from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Hi team, thank you for taking my question. Firstly, on Parachute, you know, just one small clarification. In the press update, you highlighted that there is a consumer pricing of about 60% in the press note, and you know that translates to closer to about 30-31% for the quarter. I wanted to know after this 31%, what is the incremental pricing that you have taken that has yet to you know come through in the numbers?
So we have taken additional 30% price increase in quarter one. We don't intend to take any further price increase. As I just
I'm sorry to interrupt you, sir. Mr. Shah, could you please mind muting your webcast line? There is a follow-up.
So the full effect of this price increase will be visible in quarter two, where the value growth probably could be even higher on the Parachute franchise. But again, from quarter two onwards, or later half of the quarter two, we'll also start anniversarizing in the base. So in H2, your pricing growth will progressively come down from the peaks of quarter two.
Understood, Pavan. Thank you for clarifying that. After such sharp price increases, I mean, historically, I don't think, you know, I recall much price declines in Parachute, maybe, you know, in 17, 18 and thereabouts. How confident are you on the volume growth front? You've sustained it this quarter, but does this kind of price increase put significant pressure on titrating, you know, for consumers? Can one expect, you know, a sharper decline on volumes on Parachute or not really?
No, so I think there are two things. One is obviously we will take steps. Now I am, and I can't get into details of what are the steps we will take to ensure that, you know, protecting some of the packs which are much more sensitive to pricing. We are taking steps. Secondly, as I told you, is that during such times, you know, the small players are really, you know, in terms of, they are really stretched in terms of their presence. Also, some of our branded large competitors who have been doing some, what I call, unreasonable kind of pricing, which was lost last year, I think we'll not do that. So I think there will be market share gain. So combination of that, we'll be able to hold broadly the volumes. I don't see any reason to be, you know, stressed out. And I think the other thing is that what I believe is going to happen is that the peak has been reached. And therefore, as we go towards the second half, I think there will be a little bit of stability as far as pricing and other things goes.
Thanks, Agudha, for that. Secondly, on Vaho, is, you know, great set of numbers after such a long period of time. Is there any element of channel filling or is largely Project Setu that is driving this? You know, what is the core driver for this and sustainability of this? I know you mentioned that you were trying to do double digits, but just wanted to check on that one.
I think we are very, very, we have a very high confidence level on sustaining double digit growth in Vaho. And two things. One is that, as you have seen, you are seeing also a significant increase in market share. See, what happens is that normally wholesalers take a high velocity item. So, to give you an example, a Parachute or a Shanti Amla will be a natural thing of choice which will go through the wholesale system or the indirect sales system. Now that we are, you know, over a 3-year period adding, you know, 500,000 set of outlets, invariably it is the second or third brand that goes into the range selling, and that is the advantage we are getting. So therefore, we might not only taking share from the organized players, we'll be also taking share from some of the smaller players. And the second thing which we are doing is that because we have said that I am not going to get into the BTL fight at the bottom of pyramid, but invest behind equity building, we are significantly investing behind equity building, which is also, that means that our share of voice is increasing. I'm investing behind because it is my job as a category leader to drive category growth. So we are fulfilling the job which we had abdicated because of, you know, we were trying to fight at the bottom of pyramid. So it's a combination of that. And as I said, the biggest, see, WAHO, obviously we haven't taken price increase majorly, you know. So the biggest thing which, illustration of the fact that if you take out Shanti Amla from the equation, because we are not getting into this, you know, petty-wise BTL or whatever you call it, case-wise BTL fight, which is, I think, very inane, you know. Out the volume growth of the other brands, which is brands like Hair and Care, Jasmine, Aloe, Ayurvedic, they are actually double digit for the first time after a lot of quarters. And we expect this kind of a trend to be maintained.
Fantastic. That's wonderful, heartening to hear. Lastly, if I can just push in one more on margins. I wanted to understand how should one think about margins, you know, in the near term with this kind of inflation. WAHO is, you know, margin accretive category. If that goes by double digits, while the kind of pressure that you're seeing from copra, I mean, when will this converge, and when can we start seeing, you know, margins starting to expand? Can it be like in 2 to 3 quarters? Is that a fair understanding?
So see, from a margin percentage standpoint, very honestly, it's very difficult to sort of gauge, because this is the multiple moving parts in terms of the commodity inflation, price increase that we have taken, etc., etc. But as I mentioned earlier, in this kind of inflationary scenario, what is important is to look at the profit growth, because margins will definitely look compressed because of the significant denominator effect. And as you would have heard Shaugata say, that we are expecting even higher revenue growth going ahead. So therefore, margin percentage guidance is difficult, but yes, we hold on to what I just said a while ago in terms of the profit growth.
And as I said, again, reinforcing, let us wait a quarter, no? Because situation is volatile. We have far more control on volume growth, revenue growth. I think on the margin, it will come. And as I said, that we strongly believe in emerging market volume growth is important. So if we can deliver in some of the quarters going for a double-digit volume growth, automatically margins will come next year. You know, in terms of a two-year basis, it will be a healthy margin growth. I mean, there's no reason to be concerned at all. I mean, you know, one or two quarters is fine, but I don't think any power brand globally has taken these kind of a price increases and actually can also, you know, hold and held volumes.
And we've seen in the past that any compression in margin in a particular year has been supplemented by a significant expansion in the subsequent year. So that will play out as we move along to FY27.
Fair point. Thank you very much, gents. Wishing you all the very best. Congrats on a great set of numbers.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. My question is on the parachute segment. So you mentioned that now there is like a 60% price increase on parachute. We have seen inflationary cycles in the past, but I don't think we have ever taken a 60% YOY pricing in parachute. So in light of this, I know you said you will take measures to protect volume. But in light of this, do you think it is possible that with a 60% pricing, volume might touch a negative double-digit kind of a number, or you think that that's out of the question, it can't get so bad?
First of all, I think it's the 60 is a point-to-point, and as Pawan alluded to, as we move towards second half, this number will go down drastically. You know, it will go to another between, if there is no pricing action, anything between 46 to 35% in. And I think I gave you some piece of statistics that in the twice in the past we have taken 35. That time India might have been the 11th largest economy. Today we are far bigger. And the aspiration and this one. Number two is this 60 is a one quarter phenomena. You know, it's not a two, three quarter phenomena. And
as I said, that there has been a stabilization that is happening on the copra prices from the peak. This kind of a demand, you know, the supply demand, this one was also something which was a function of some speculative also function. It is not a structural major issue. So it will get sorted out. Now, obviously, you will only see a proof of this one after the quarter happens, the second quarter. But we don't see, we are not unduly perturbed by this one. There could be volume pressure here and there, but I mean, that double digit, this one is not a, it's a doomsday scenario, is unlikely to happen. It's not, I don't think anything like that will happen.
No, let me just add, I think we're confident nothing of that sort will happen. In fact, in this quarter also, if you adjust for MLH, it is 1% positive growth. And also, this is despite taking certain calls of rationalizing the supply on certain channel SKU combination, because that was very low margin. So we took a very conscious call in terms of not supplying to protect margin. So therefore, we are absolutely confident that there won't be a scenario where we will have any major decline. In all probability, we should be able to deliver growth adjusted for MLH.
Got it. And secondly, just wanted to understand the drivers behind the copra price. What is the reason that the inflation is so high? And even taking a slight moderation from here, it would still for the full year remain much higher than what our original estimates were. So what led to this basically?
I think I talked about in my opening commentary. So what happened was there was a slight, you know, drop of productivity in the coconut, this one about around 9%. Now, what happened was that some of the demand, as I talked about, that coconut which is used for consumption, coconut which is used in, you know, for religious purposes, those initially, they are inelastic. So the copra thing is the end of that entire supply chain. Now, therefore, that led to, and also what happened is there were some unseasonal rains, and which was in April, which led to copra. Copra needs dry weather for conversion. That conversion cycle got delayed. And since all the other demands were, you know, met with a certain pricing, the availability for copra, you know, availability, that was further shrunk. Because when you had a 9% overall productivity drop, if the other things have done at a certain level, copra, that availability was shrunk. And then that led to some speculative activity. I think now what has happened is, given all the pricing, automatically demand rationing has happened. And as a result, what we are seeing is that as demand rationing starts happening, we are seeing the first signs that we are still in season. See, the season continues till September. So we don't have a problem in terms of, so our first job was to also ensure that we have supply, you know, supply assurance. So therefore, and now we believe that we have far better control of the situation as of now. Now, going forward, yes, I think the overall full year copra will still be high, but at the same time, sequentially, copra prices are expected to now, you know, go down unless there is again some other, you know, black swan event or something, but directionally. And what happens is that if you see inflationary cycles, they invariably followed by a deflationary cycle, because what happens is demand titration, you know, happens. Also, the rains this time are good. We, our first idea about the crop is also decent. So we believe that, you know, that they will be followed by a deflationary cycle.
So when you're saying productivity is 9% down, does it mean that the crop itself is sort of 9% down? What exactly does it mean?
Broadly, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay. And this is because of some seasonal vagaries that the 9% has got affected, or what is the underlying reason for that?
Temperature and temperature and seasonal rain, or there's a function of that.
Understood. And this Vaho, basically you are focusing more on the mid and premium because you think that the lower end doesn't really make profit. But what we have seen across many...
I think it makes profit, but it doesn't make as much profit.
Correct. Correct. So we have seen across many segments that consumption is under a huge amount of pressure. And in this kind of a scenario, basically the consumer is willing to go for cheaper alternatives. We have seen that in multiple categories in the consumption space. So while your strategy is sort of good of focusing on the more profitable parts, but do you think this is the right time to do that?
I don't know. I have not noticed. See, I'll first of all, the indexation of RPI is not that massive. So what have we said is, even in VAHO also, what we are not doing is, in brands like Amla category, not focusing on BTL. That doesn't mean I'm not going to invest behind Shanti Amla mid and large packs. Okay? It is about that 10-20 price point BTL-driven strategy. Once we have now got VAHO, the rest of the things, I will again invest, I might invest in Amla also, and grow the category. What we are saying is, we don't believe that by converting ATL to BTL, that is basically, that doesn't necessarily lead to consumption. The question is, if I give 10%, 20% BTL, am I getting increased offtake? My hypothesis is that increase in BTL doesn't give you offtake, long-term offtake.
Right. Got it. Yeah, that's it from me, Saugata.
I'm not saying price increases, in Amla. All I'm saying is, I'm not buying volumes by doing BTL. That's all.
Understood.
That doesn't mean the consumer will stop buying because Marico has stopped giving BTL to the wholesaler.
Got it. Understood. Understood.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Soman from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thanks for your time. So two questions. So firstly, on VAHO, what would be the volume growth? I mean, you indicated that it's sort of double-digit, excluding Shanti Amla. Including Shanti Amla, would it be like low single digit?
No, it will be slightly more.
Yeah, mid-single digits.
Mid-single digits. And so that effectively means that volumes for the non, so the bottom third, the remaining 30% of your portfolio, other than Parachute, Saffola and VAHO, would be sort of north of 25%. Would that be the right rate to get you to the 9% overall volume?
We don't want to get into this one. All I can say is that we have indicated that Saffola is mid-single digits. We would not get into individual category-wide growth. But yes, the premium part of the business, the diversification of business, would be higher growth.
I understand. No, that's very clear. And then just lastly, on this VAHO bit again, so your one of your competitors on their call, they mentioned that they have gained probably the most market share in their oil category, and obviously they compete in Amla. So would that be the right inference, that they are gaining market share because of BTL or whatever?
I can't comment on this one. We have gained 150 basis points value share. We focus on value share.
Very clear. So that's it from me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nihal Mahesh Jham from HSBC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good evening, and congratulations. So that, focusing on the foods business, there has been a slight moderation from the 40% growth you saw in Q4 to 20%. So any specific parts you want to highlight on that?
I think, see, there's a quarterly basis happened, because last year there were some launches which happened. So I think, we are fairly confident about 25%+ growth in the food business. Sometimes this fluctuates because, as you know, it's not a, still a 900 crore+ business, so sometimes fluctuations happen. There is nothing to be worried about. Two things we look at. One thing we look at is that the core of the foods, which is the Saffola oats, masala oats, and honey and all, are they growing by double digit? Yes, they're growing by double digit. Sometimes, because there is some part of True Elements, some part of Plix, it fluctuates. I don't think there's any cause for concern. Maybe 40 would have been a slightly higher number, because we have always been talking about a 25% kind of a growth, 25%+ growth.
Sure, Saugata. Second is on the profitability of the food business itself. In case of personal care, you've given this outlook of double-digit EBITDA. Now, in case of foods, you mentioned that you expect to see a gradual improvement in the gross margin from where you've already reached. But just if I had to speak in terms of the EBITDA profitability, what will be the aspiration, say, similar by FY 2027 for this part of the business?
So I think two things. One is, as far as the oats plus masala oats, the core of the business, which is a concern, which is a significant this one, we are almost, touching the company EBITDA. Now, What we have realized is that as long as you concentrate on value-added part and this one at a, we break even, say, any category at 150 to 200 and we hit 300, 400. So our objective will be to get some of these categories into that. Having said that, quite separately, I think over the last 2 years, we've improved gross margin by 1,000 basis points. We will, it's still a work in progress. We need to continue to do that. And I believe that what we actually look at is the blended gross margin of our NPD versus your current portfolio. The blended gross margin of our NPD is higher right now than our current portfolio, and this will progressively move up.
And also just to add, foods is also a low A&P model. So low gross margin, low A&P model, and therefore at a net contribution level, it won't be very, very different. Once it reaches a particular scale, then to reach to a company EBITDA is not much of an effort because it's a low A&P model.
And also continuing on that, we are using the Saffola master brand and getting the amortization of the spend. So, you know, you have to look at from a Saffola master brand, Saffola total, this one in net contribution terms.
So just quickly, one last question, that the 20,000 crore number you've given by FY20, just more clarity in terms of, you know, the different segment contribution. You mentioned foods and D2C 25% by 27, but just more clarity on the statement you made in the annual report.
So I think we can't get it into
it. It's very difficult to give a, you know, exact breakup of that 20,000 crores, but the idea is that on all the core categories, we've given some guidance. For example, let's say we're talking about foods, 25% plus growth, digital first business, 25% plus growth. Waho, we are expecting to deliver double-digit growth. A combination of all of these, plus, of course, international business, we also expect mid-teens kind of a number. With a combination of all this, this 20,000 crores can be achieved.
Got that. Thank you so much. Wish you all the best.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. The next question is from the line of Harit Kapoor from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. So just had three questions. One was on Setu. So, you know, it's almost a year and a half in your three-year journey. Just wanted to get a sense of, you know, how much of the 500,000 direct would we have broadly covered and any target for this year?
No, no. So I think while, to be honest, while we kicked off Setu sometime around, you know, 1.5 years ago, but the impact started because we were prototyping the Setu thing. So I would say that we are seeing the first signs of growth of Setu, and you will see perhaps better, you know, impact of Setu as we go into the second half of the year. There are two parts of it. One is the rural direct reach, where we are not only doing direct distribution, but also converting some of our indirect to direct using far more technology and getting a control of it to better ranges. The second part of the Setu will be also in urban, where we will, you know, increase our presence in food specialty stores, cosmetic, as well as chemist, which we will unfold as we go. So you will start seeing, so this will lead to two things. One is you will certainly see a GT improvement in GT growth as we move from quarter to quarter. This process, while we said it's 3 years, I would knock off the first 6 months because we were trying to get the model right. So I would say 1 year, and there is two more years to go. But we are pretty confident that what we have achieved in this is two things. One, we believe that the long-term sustainable competitive advantage for incumbents or large players in the FMCG sector is strength in GT. GT is not going to vanish overnight, okay? So therefore, while we get short-term sales in by investing in OT, but we have said that our it is on our interest to ensure that our distribution system in terms of ROI stability stays continuously, you know, in control. We were the first to call about this issue of GT, and that's why we started this Setu. And the second thing it will start doing is we'll be able to do range selling. And tomorrow, some of the digital brands, once they hit a certain critical mass, create a specialized DT channel for the, say, the top 10,000, 15,000 food outlets or the top 10,000, 5,000 beauty stores or the top 10,000 chemists. So that's the other thing which we have not even leveraged yet. That will be phase 2B of Setu, you know?
Got it. The second question was on VAHO. You know, given that the non-Amla brands have grown double-digit and clearly share has come from those brands, just wanted to get a sense of, you know, who are the players that, or you know, which are the type of players that we've been successful in gaining share from. The question essentially is, you know, if you look at it a few years back, you'd also had certain, you know, D2C-led players in the premium space who came in and took up some space there, created certain brands there. So, is some of it coming from there as well, that as you are expanding your reach, customers coming back to the umbrella brands? A little bit more color on that, that's all.
So I think mere distribution or placing a product doesn't lead to market share. I'm alluding to some D2C brands, okay? And I don't think Nielsen captures them at all. So whatever share we have got would have been share from large organized players. So I don't think there is any this one on D2C players, this one. And this, as I said, that I think the biggest gain has come because of our Setu, which is involved in direct distribution, availability, weighted distribution, and secondly, because of the fact that we are now investing behind this, some of the brands, it is leading to overall brand preference.
Got it. And lastly, you know, in your presentation, you had a slide where you spoke about the 900 crore-2,000 crore journey for the four brands in the digital space. Is this pertaining to digital-first brands overall, or it's pertaining to these four brands in the journey you see these four brands going over the next 3 years? Because I just want to know if there is an acquisition element to that 900 crore-2,000 crore also.
No, so I think as of now it is the four brands, but we'll be happy to acquire some and ensure that, you know, this number is definitely achievable crossed. But what we
Yeah, wish you all the best.
Is, just to add that we ought to alluded to in this chart is that what is the potential TAM expansion for each of these four brands?
Yeah, I got that. Great. Thanks. Wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arnab Mitra from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congratulations on a great quarter. My first question was again on the digital brands. So you've given this enhanced aspiration of 2.5x and also margins going up sharply. Your chart shows a significant jump from where you are today to 27. So now what we've seen in other digital companies sometimes is both the things don't happen together. If you try to pull the margin up, it does affect the growth rate, at least to some extent. So are you what's giving you the confidence that you can do both, which is scale up the top line but take up the percentage margins in some of these businesses?
Okay. I think I covered this, Arnab, last time. There are two cohorts. In terms of Beardo and Plix, they have broken even. In fact, Beardo is close to double-digit EBITDA. Plix has broken even. They now are on an accelerated growth path, and obviously they will have, you know, because of cost synergies and scale synergies, they'll continue. So in order to make them grow at an accelerated, this one, I don't need to do burn. Actually, my EBITDA will also increase. As far as Just Herbs and True Elements is concerned, we are okay with moderate growth and get a path to break even within the next 18 months. The biggest one, which I think we have a unique opportunity, is that all these brands have access to the entire Marico cost structure, whether it's procurement, whether it's supply chain. Now look at another example of digital media buying, because we are going to buy one Marico digital buying and digital media buying. All these have structural cost savings with a standalone, you know, digital brand will never have access to. And those are the things we are tapping. For example, I'll give you an example. You know, Beardo, when we insourced one or two of the hero SKUs into our own manufacturing system, we straightaway got a 500-600 basis points improvement in gross margin. We are starting that process now.
So just to add, there are two broad levers. One is, of course, this back-end synergies which Saugata spoke about. And second is also with the scale, operating leverage will kick in. Now these businesses are becoming sizable, and therefore, let's say, overheads, etc., will have an operating leverage. So this is giving us the confidence that even operating margin percentage will improve. And again, we have a job to do in Just Herbs and True Elements, which we are expecting that we should soon move to break even, and therefore, the overall digital cohort, the upliftment of margin will happen.
Just one follow-up on this. I mean, so what we've seen again in some of the other digital brands is that this advertising spend, which tends to be a really large cost in these businesses, they almost become like a variable cost because it's performance marketing, which is almost variable. So are you saying that in your case, the way the P&L of these brands look, there is actually going to be decent operating leverage on advertising, which I assume would be a really large percentage of sales at an early stage when the brand is scaling?
So let me give you a construct. As far as advertising is concerned, a good digital marketing leads to lower ROAS. Number two is the if you look at, say, D2C part of the business, as long as the AOVs are high and your digital marketing spends are better, you actually get a better profitability. The second thing that happens is that we also believe that it's just not about performance marketing, but also off-platform spends that needs to also drive. And as I told, alluded to, that given it is a one Marico buy, your off-platform spend efficiencies are far better than standalone brands. So unlike some of the standalone brands, we are also getting economies of scale as far as A2S is concerned. And as you look at it, it's not that we make super obscene gross margin beyond the fact that at a, anything between 250 to 300 crore level, I can make, double digit EBITDA. It proves that our cost structure can be manageable. And as you know, I think mentioned, I think, in my opening remarks, recently there's a study done by a VC and in partnership with a MBB consulting firm on insurgent brands. You will notice that not only our brands are high growth, are also extremely capital efficient.
Got it, got it. And my last question is actually on the Copra, that, where Copra prices today are, how much do they have to drop before you have to start taking price drops? What I mean is, till where have you priced Copra on a broad-based basis? Do you expect second half they maybe need to take price hikes? So given how much the cycle has gone up, even if it comes off, let's say, 10-15% from here, you may not need to take price corrections.
So it all depends on the situation. What we will do is we will always balance volume and margin. I think, and we now have a broad, pricing model which has been developed with around 15 years of data. So we will not be greedy about margins. At the same time, we believe that usually in a deflationary cycle, we have been able to increase our margins.
I just want to call out one thing, Arnab, that our vulnerability towards Copra price fluctuations have come down over the years as we pulled multiple levers of margin expansion that we've discussed over the call in the last one or two quarters. For example, food gross margin or digital business margins. In fact, driving Wahoo growth through mid and premium segment is also helping us drive up margins with a better mix. In fact, rapid scale-up of premium portfolio in international business, scaling up of the smaller business units in international business, all these are additional profit levers, and therefore our dependence on Copra as a lever of profitability has come down and will keep going down over the next few years. Just to share a number, the dependence on Parachute and Saffola for profits has gone down by approximately 1,000 basis points over the last few years. So therefore, we are not that much vulnerable now as to Copra and edible oil prices now as we used to be less a few years ago.
And I think if you really look at it, that as if Wahoo keeps on growing double digit, your digital businesses grow and all that. So this number will progressively, even this year, will get less impactful. So it's fine. I mean, yes, it's something which is, has been something unprecedented, but it's not giving us sleepless nights.
Understood, understood. Thanks so much. That's it from my side. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take the last question for today, which is from the line of Nitin from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the opportunity. So my questions are around the Copra prices. So there is a drop of around 12%. So based on the previous answer, it seems like we are not going to take any price cut right now, and we will look to balance. So the other two questions are around the there was a solvent extractor's press release which talks about pest attack hurting yield of sort of Copra. So is there any such concern for this year? And second is around, is it like import of Copra is banned in the country? So can we import finished good from Bangladesh?
No, no, we cannot import either copra or oil. We can only import to the extent what we can export. Now, the representation from C is an independent industry body. So again, we do not have such information of that pest, etc., damaging the crop in a wide-scale manner. Yes, there could be some limited impact. But again, it's an industry body which does represent the industry as a whole.
So just to add that, as I said, that the drop has been not major. It 8 to 9%. It happens in any crop. And whatever little visibility we have is, there's no additional concern as we go into next year.
Yeah, this is reassuring. Second, in terms of like the long-term path we have discussed in the annual report about around doubling revenue by 2030. So this implies around mid-teen sort of a growth ahead. So would you be able to highlight like how much of the business we are expecting from organic business and inorganic?
See, I think when we talk about a five-year number, it's an aspiration. We now put the building blocks in place to do it. It's very difficult to say inorganic, organic. I have never believed inorganic to be a substitute for, you know, organic growth. Inorganic is always an accelerator, and therefore for us, we will always make, and in today's uncertain world, always there has to be a plan B and a plan C. So I don't see any inorganic component, that kind of a plan. The way we said is that I think given that we have started the year on a good note and the building blocks in place of diversification, getting VAHO back into double-digit value growth, international business getting into teens, I think our ability to deliver, a kind of a 15%, 14-15% growth, which takes us to that, is possible. I think this year we have talked about a 25%, around 25%, which accelerates. And that's why I had told in the opening commentary that in order to secure that aspiration, we will try and attempt to hit the first to move to 15,000 in 2 years.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. All the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. As that was the last question for today, I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments. Thank you and over to you, sir.
To conclude, we've had an encouraging start of the new fiscal, having delivered robust growth and resilient margins in both India and international business, despite facing unprecedented levels of input cost pressure. In India, there are clear signs of gradual pickup in the core portfolios, while the new businesses play their part of accelerating growth. The international business has been a consistent growth driver, and we intend to further solidify its double-digit growth trajectory over the medium term. We are fairly confident of maintaining the strong volume and revenue momentum in the quarters ahead, while tapping multiple levers at our disposal to effectively navigate transient inflationary pressures in the immediate term. We will continue to prioritize driving a sustainable and profitable growth construct for the medium and long term. That is it from our side. If you have any further queries, please feel free to reach out to our IR team and they'll be happy to address. Thank you and have a great evening.
Thank you, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Marico Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.